The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The last episode is so delightful.
It's all stuff we've already covered, though.
We talked about that and that.
It's like we're so ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
We missed a few things, though. There's a few things we missed.
No, we didn't. No, you may have.
Save it for the show.
Brian Clarkson.
You wrote a whole damn article about the ice cream machine.
You did.
Here's the cold open.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right, you scads.
I think we should start doing cold opens at one point, though.
I think so, too.
I think so, too. Yep. This can be the first one.
This is Jabba the Pod.
Right, sons, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's Jabba the Pod, our weekly Star Wars podcast where we discuss and celebrate the movies, shows, books, comics, games, and everything else from the galaxy far, far away. Every generation has a legend, every legend is a podcast, and this is ours. I am your host, disgraced former Jedi and Force mystic Brian Silliman. Joining me are the greatest co-host in the galaxy, starting with former Force-sensitive Assassin's Guild member turned droids rights activist Caitlin Bush.
Hello there.
And the man who lets us record on his starship, the smuggler, with a not-so-secret heart of gold, captain of the Starbinger, Matt Romano.
Greetings!
Welcome to our Season 2 finale. Season, not series, Season 2 finale, where we're going to catch up with the last three episodes of The Mandalorian.
Oh, Mandalorian!
Documentary. the Disney Gallery. Star Wars, The Mandalorian. Also known as how many colons can we get in this title? And then we're going to run through so much more Star Wars news and rumors that there's just a lot. There's a lot to get through. So this is probably going to be a big old episode. So strap in, hitch up your bootstraps, and, get a bottle, I guess. Which, because there's a lot going on. Anyway, with no more ado, let's get to some news on the march.
News on the march.
We're going to start with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And him talking about the series Kenobi.
Kenobi!
This is exciting because this was unearthed by our friend and colleague at Sci-Fi Wire and generally extraordinary person, Angelique Roche. She recently had a great interview with Ewan McGregor, and she uncovered all kinds of interesting things about Ewan in general. I mean, even Winnie the Pooh made an appearance.
Yeah.
It was adorable. And she has this way of getting things. It's hard, and you know that, Caitlin, you and I have talked about this a lot. It's sometimes hard doing these interviews because every question you want to ask, you know they can't answer.
They can't answer. No, not at all. And so the trick is getting as much as you can out of the very little bit that they can. And Angelique is a pro and also one of the most charming people you will ever meet in your life. And so she's just perfect for it.
It's impossible to not share with her. And I mean, you're very good at that, too. I just realize it's not going to happen. So I just say, hey, do the catchphrase. That's a different kind of superpower right there. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'll just accept it. Sure.
Accept the compliment.
Are you doing it right now? Are you doing it? She's doing it right now. Okay. Anyway, they were talking about Kenobi, and he did say that he's more excited about playing Obi-Wan now, even more so now than he was for the prequels, and he was excited for the prequels.
I mean, especially,
always think of him, and Matt, we've talked about this documentary, and so Caitlin, I mean, it's not just you and me, Matt, late at night talking about this, but the documentary, The Beginning.
I'm missing out on something here.
Late nights with Matt and Brian. That's a whole nother spin-off podcast.
Did you see this Phantom Menace documentary?
Yo, Matt. Just last night. So you see this thing? Yeah, I mean, it's really good.
2 a.m.
really
phone calls.
It's like that thing with the highlighters and the board. Oh my god. No, but it's because I love it in that when he's just living it up, mostly in the beginning parts of the documentary. But then that stunt. He's like, "Do you want to be in Star Wars?" They said. He's like, "Two and right."
I mean, how can he also just not be more excited now, all these years later? Because he's only his Obi-Wan, his version of Obi-Wan, has only grown in stature and appreciation over the years. Yeah,
absolutely. Like, yeah.
And like, we're, I mean, we're certainly in the middle of a prequel renaissance right now.
We absolutely are.
Because everyone has a new trilogy to hate.
Exactly. So
all of a sudden, the prequels are masterpieces.
Wasn't so bad.
And I'm like, welcome, everyone. It's like they've always been great. Anyway, it's like they've actually they've always
actually
been
pushes glasses but, up.
Roger was always funny.
But I mean, a big part of it, and he said a big part of that excitement is because of The Mandalorian, because he watched The Mandalorian and he was on set for The Mandalorian and he said, I really liked it. He's like, it's really Star Wars, isn't it? And he went on to say, you know, that how he visited the set was blown away by the technology that they were using, a lot of which we've been seeing in the Disney Gallery. So, of course, he was blown away by it. So it's like he just loves the Western feel of it, loves all the influences. And so I'm sure he was excited before, but after seeing The Mandalorian being on set and then seeing the finished product, I'm sure he's like, OK, they're going to make that show, but centered around me and around my Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
I mean, of course he's excited.
And this time I'm doing it in front of like real sets and real props as opposed to just like a room that's green, you know?
That's green and blue and like...
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, to be fair, there were a ton of miniatures. We've gone through this.
With Obi-Wan in the miniature, you know, you can't...
Exactly, but shooting in the yeah, they didn't shrink him down and then Rick Moranis is like, oh, we can't get him back. Sorry, guys.
We have the technology.
We lost him in the lawn.
It's like, get Kidman in here because Moulin Rouge is next and I can't blow him up, but we can shrink her. This is quality stuff. But
Moulin Rouge, the podcast.
Yeah, and listening to one of these, I forget which episode that we're about to talk about, where Deborah Chow is talking about influences in her episode of The Mandalorian, and she talks about Yojimbo, which is one of the, you know, classic Kurosawa movies. And I was just thinking about that approach, the Yojimbo approach kind of with Obi-Wan, with Ewan's Obi-Wan, it just got me so excited all over again. I'm not quite, this made me feel it's like, oh yeah, that's happening. And it's actually happening.
It's actually happening.
I'm still not at the point where it's like, once we start seeing images, I'll get all excited all over again.
I mean, it was announced so long ago, I feel like. But it really wasn't that long ago.
No, I feel like we'll see. It's like between that and Cassian Andor, which was announced, a long time ago.
Yeah, and unfortunately, things are probably a little delayed now due to everything that's happened. So it's like,
except for Mando season 2 is on track.
God bless.
And is not going to be delayed at all.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's an update that we did get in the last couple weeks. Is going to premiere on schedule, stay on target.
October, baby.
As if Disney would actually let that not happen.
As if they would let a pandemic stop them.
They'd hire a cast of actors to act it out in front of your televisions for every subscriber if they had to. It's like, and talk about masks, it's like, well, they're all in helmets, so they're all good.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, the whole interview with Ewan McGregor and Angelique is on YouTube. If you look up Ace Universe, Ewan McGregor, you will find it. The whole thing is worth watching, and there's also some good Pinocchio news and stuff like that in there, so check it out. It's a really good interview. So we are recording this on Friday, June 19th, 2020, and that means there is a new episode of The Disney Gallery, Star Wars The Mandalorian.
Oh, Mandalorian!
To explore, as well as two episodes prior to this one that we haven't talked about yet. So that's right, we're doing three episodes at once. Can we do it? Probably not.
Should
we
do it?
Definitely not. But we're going to do it anyway. I resent that, Caitlin. And here we go. If there's any new canon coming at us, and there is a little bit, there is.
Yes.
We're going to be using it this time. So we're getting our trusty canon already. We have hot takes along the way. We'll sound the hot take alarm. Usually anytime Matt talks, so we'll just get right ready for that.
Yes.
If anything really blew our minds, and there was a lot, so we don't want to overuse it, but if anything really blew our minds, we'll let loose with a seismic mind charge. Now this episode, at least episode 8, the final one of the Disney Gallery Star Wars The Mandalorian, is brand new, so definitely watch that before continuing to listen to this, because Caitlin, there is what?
There is a clear order in which you should watch Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, and then listen to our podcast.
There is a clear order. You will enjoy it more that way. You could try it the other way, and then I don't know. I haven't
ever tried that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe someday.
It would be weird for us to try it.
I think we should. I think it makes sense.
I don't really know how that would happen, but anyway, okay. It's behind the scenes stuff, so you can't really spoil it. So we're gonna dispense with the spoiler klaxon, but do not worry, I'm still here, and you could still jump on my magical train to Wondertown. That's right. Do you want to go to an AMC theater? Do you want to stay at home and watch your Jimbo with me? I know what you're going to say. I want the baby. I want to build the baby. The baby. The baby. If we're all set, punch it.
But bounty hunting is a complicated profession.
The Disney Gallery, Star Wars, The Mandalorian. I think that's the seventh time I've said that. So far, let's see how many we go. Catching up with the episodes we missed. Episode 6, Process. Favreau on Star Wars being a gateway for him to Westerns and samurai movies on the planet Yabana. It starts right out with him obviously talking about, it's no secret that Westerns and samurai movies are a huge inspiration for George Lucas, and his gateway into those was through Star Wars. He saw Star Wars first, and then he watched the things that inspired Star Wars. And I have to say, it's like, that was the same for me. I mean, when I was, you know, a kid, I wasn't throwing on Kurosawa.
Yeah, they're not like,
I think it was the same for me too, because my dad and his side of the family are really big on all the old Westerns. They're a big John Wayne family. So
gotta build, get an airport, put my name on it.
Yeah, there we go.
I relate to that, because I was like, I watched Star Wars first and then I watched the movies that inspired it. And his approach, and he talks through his approach, is that Mandalorian is set in Star Wars, but he didn't want to base it on Star Wars. He wanted to base it on the things that influenced Star Wars, such as Westerns and samurai movies and things like Lone Wolf and Cub. And that's very apparent. And I think that's just distilled right in that way. I mean, this is kind of an ongoing thing in all three of these episodes, behind the scenes episodes we're going to talk about, is that approach really sets it apart.
Yeah,
right.
It's
not just, here's another copy of this. It's
exactly
its own special bespoke thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, not to, like, you know, poo-poo on the new movies. But
to harp,
like,
too much.
No, but it's obvious. No. But it's obvious, like, looking at the new movies, like, there's so much reconstruction of the original trilogy, you know, and then so many, like, really heavy on homage and even, like, similar scenes. I mean, like, Crait and Hoth are, like, very similar, you know.
Visually similar.
It's salt with red dust behind it. That's not similar.
And I know what you mean, though, Matt. It's, like, it's
salt.
It's the however you feel about it, the new trilogy very much is, it's imitating the original versus this is imitating the thing that made the original.
Yes,
so that's
exactly.
I think that's why so many people have really grabbed on to The Mandalorian, not even talking about the sequels anymore, but just talking about The Mandalorian. I think that's why so many people have grabbed on, because it feels so much like the original trilogy. It feels so much like Star Wars, because it lives up to that, because it's taking from the same base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know what else also feels very much like Star Wars? The sequel trilogy. Anyway,
it does. No one is saying it does.
It
doesn't.
Nobody
Brian.
Said that. Yeah, I'm just
you
saying.
You both are literally saying it. anyway, it's also clear that Dave Filoni was integral in figuring out the broad strokes before with Favreau, and then Favreau would go and write the scripts. It's just so clear that again and again with every episode of this, how pivotal to this whole thing Dave Filoni was. He's in every conversation. There's no conversation that Favreau is having without Dave.
Right. He is definitely Favreau's number two throughout all of this.
Yeah. Through the whole thing. I mean, he's doing, when he's not doing this, he's doing second unit. He's figuring out the broad strokes. He's the canon czar and all these things. You know, he's just definitely number two. And it's.
Yeah. You get like a really good, like, big brother, little brother vibe. From them.
It was really sweet. I love their relationship.
Yeah. Giving each other crap for certain things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, it's
it.
Like that vibe seems feels familiar.
That
I wonder
feels
why.
Familiar.
But he's also like, and he always like leans on Dave Filoni, is like, oh, Ugnaughts? Yeah, Dave, tell him about the Ugnaughts. Like, go ahead. Like,
yeah.
What's this?
Like, well, it's interesting because when we're doing Clone Wars, you know, it's,
So in every single Star Wars thing I've ever done, there's a blurb.
Yeah.
They go through so many, the whole process. They had storyboards that were overseen by the directors and producers. Those would get turned into pencil drawings, and then those pencil drawings would then become animatics with temp dialogue. And I wish I had just an ongoing scroll of those as a screensaver, because I would just have on my big screen all the time.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
The pencil animatic then turned to digital previs. And Kathleen Kennedy said the most eye-opening thing about doing it that way is they could see the process more fully even before they started to shoot, so they could refine the storytelling and, as she said, iterate longer on it before shooting. And Favreau says it allows you, and I love that he said this, it allows you to fail early so that you can fix these things before you're shooting for real. And so you can try it. I was like, oh, that's obviously not working. We can fix it. So by the time we get on set, they're not wasting a single moment. And this is very, very similar to animation, where there's not much left on the cutting room floor, obviously, because it's there's nothing
physically being made.
But that's why it's just this fascinating intersection of what Dave is used to doing and what they're doing with this. Bryce Dallas Howard popped in and said they all had previs planned well before shooting for every episode, and the directors were involved much earlier on than they usually are. And they're doing it as efficiently as you'd be doing reshoot. They call it, they refer to it like reshoots on a superhero movie. And Favreau was talking about Iron Man, and Taika was talking about Thor. Because you know, with reshoots, Taika was saying in the main shoots, you're playing around, you're exploring, you're seeing what you can get, different line readings and stuff. With reshoots, you know exactly what's missing and what you need. You have a clear mission, so you just go in, you get it once, and you have it done. You're just flying through shots so quickly. And that's also, I was listening to him saying, I was like, well, that's independent film, really. It's because you have to have everything planned, because you have no time and you have no money, and you have to have everything planned within an inch of its life. And that's kind of how Rick Famuyiwa was used to working as well, because he comes from indie film. And so he wasn't used to the previs and wasn't used to, you know, he's used to a small team going in and getting it done. But he wasn't used to all of these new tricks and toys that just helped him to do it better. Deborah Chow also mentioned how this whole thing in the planning is so much more useful for shooting stunts, which just you can really plan that as well and perfect them. And that is so evident as well. They talk about prep time again and saying they had 2 months of prep time on this, where usually directing a TV show, they have 8 or 9 days. And they're not figuring stuff out there on set. They're just executing. Chow then, she makes the reference to, she's talking about the big standoff in Chapter 3, which I think we all remember, which is a highlight of the whole first season. And that's where she drops the Yojimbo reference. And if anyone hasn't seen that, I threw that on after watching this installment to see what she was talking about, because it had been a long time since I watched this. And that's where I got all excited about her directing Kenobi and everything else, because not only is that a great movie, and I was looking at it, it's like with wipe transitions and everything, it's like so clear. If anyone's looking for, you know, just a really great movie to watch that's going to get you more excited about all things Deborah Chow directing Kenobi and everything else, and also see what she's talking about, the Criterion Channel has that, as well as so much Kurosawa. And they're not paying me to say that. They should. Criterion Channel, if you want to, you know, feel free to just back up that old dump truck of Criterion money. Or just pay me in that Grand
sweet,
Budapest
sweet
Blu-rays.
Cash.
I know. Yeah. That sweet, 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 sweet cash. So this team is all bringing something important and distinct. Every single member of this team, and it's I just came away from this and I'm like, I'm so glad that all of them are still involved in some way. Filoni and Favreau, obviously, as kind of like the two guys that are the future of Star Wars completely, I think. Famuyiwa and Bryce still on Mando, Chow on Kenobi, and Taika doing the new film. My notes, I don't know what this means. It just says, this team, comma, damn it, this team, exclamation mark.
That's
what I think. They can do anything.
Yeah, I think I love this team. And that one ended with Famuyiwa talking about directing a stunt for mocap in previs for the Prison Break episode. And he said he's excited and how great that was. And he said it ended up being pretty much what it was. And he's excited to do it again once he gets a script.
Yeah.
And they all they all laughed, and that was the end of that episode. Any other thoughts on that episode six, Caitlin Bush or Matt Romano?
I honestly, it's been so long since I watched it that I didn't rewatch it
this morning.
Shockingly, no. After the 40-minute episode that dropped this morning,
that was a long one. This morning.
It was a long one, but it was absolutely delightful. And again, this team of people is just killer. Like there's no better people I think to be leading the future of Star Wars than this team right there.
Yeah, I agree. Matt Romano, any thoughts?
Just amazing. It's fantastic. The team. Can you imagine J.J. Abrams sitting around a table talking about Ugnaughts? I can't. I don't know. I love them all.
Why? Why was that necessary?
The look on Matt's face when he was doing that too, y'all.
Why throw that in? You know? That was so unnecessary.
I know. I just want to throw in something there. Okay, I'm moving on.
That was so censors at the ready. That was so motherfucking unnecessary.
It was. I just want to get a rise out of the group.
You entitled piece of well success.
Whoa!
You wanted to get a rise.
Hey,
success.
Hey, Skywalker is rising. Lower it.
Yeah. Eat me. Anyway.
Matt Romano, your name reflects failure.
Yes, I can imagine that because he does it in the extras all the time.
He does. Yeah, he does.
He does. Oh, God. I don't even want to continue.
Episode 6.
It's very hot in my room right now.
No, screw you. Screw you.
The Mandalorian.
Episode 7. This is the one that I have been waiting for, that I had been waiting for such a long time, and I'm so happy they did it. Score. A whole episode with Ludwig Göransson. Well, that was really
good. That was good.
Did you just do that just with your mouth?
I did.
Ooh, do it again. Oh, I thought you were harmonizing.
Yeah, but Caitlin was doing. Yeah, I think it was the combination.
It was the combination. We were doing a really good job.
Okay, dude, try it again. Do it again. Both of you do it again.
Ooh.
All right, the magic is gone.
We tried. We thought about it too much. I'm in my head now. I can't make art when I'm in my head like that.
Yeah, that was too much in my head.
Come on.
Time.
Yeah.
Well, then get out of your head.
Oh.
All right, that made up for a lot. Okay, the whole thing about Ludwig Göransson, and I say this with so much love, but this guy is nuts in the best possible way.
Oh, yeah, I love
him.
This
guy is an insane genius.
He's the most darling human being, I think. Like, he's the weirdest, just cutest person.
As a lover of film scores, I mean, it's the film and television scores now. It's the music I listen to more than anything else. Mm. And it's the thing that got me into, you know, listening to classical music and everything else like it did with him, as he says in this episode. So to have something that highlights it like this and to have someone that takes the care and attention to it that he does and everybody did, realizing how important it is to this show and how important music is to Star Wars as a whole was so wonderful. Anyway, it starts with, it's just Ludwig Göransson on a recorder. He's a little recorder. And then he brings out and he says, the first thing I did when I got this job is I ordered a ton of recorders. And then he takes out a huge curved one. And just like that, he starts.
And it's the sound.
And I'm just chills immediately. And he says it's soulful, intimate, and almost childlike. And he had that, and then he adds in the drum beat, the... And then he goes to the piano, he's like, and then I layered this on it, he goes, and he's playing it, and then he doubles it on a bass line, and he's saying, it's all chromatic, he's like, something's about to happen, and then all of a sudden it comes together, and I just wrote, it's magic, I have forgotten how powerful and instantly iconic this music is.
It was great.
And how he got involved is fascinating. He was Ryan Coogler's roommate at USC.
Insane.
And then he was also bros with Donald Glover too.
Yeah, I mean they worked on student films. Göransson, of course, then they obviously stayed close because Göransson did the score for Black Panther and won an Oscar for it. So there was a Marvel connection to Favreau, and also with, you mentioned Donald Glover through Lion King and Favreau. So it's Favreau says it has to feel like Star Wars but be removed. Which, you know, not using themes, themes we've heard before, which made things easier for him. He's like, if they wanted legacy themes, it would have been totally different. And you could tell he was kind of glad that they weren't going to go that route because he's a huge John Williams fan, as he says, and how can you measure up? You can't.
So instead, you lock yourself away in your house for a month with nothing but instruments and you make something.
Yeah, just like I'm doing, except I don't have instruments and it's 3 months and I'm not doing anything. And he
was just prepping for COVID.
Yeah, and he's referencing he probably has a lot of music written now. He references Morricone and scores for Kurosawa, and they encouraged fun and experimentation, and that just seems to be him, because this guy seems to live for just digging out weird stuff to see what kind of sounds they make. I get this kind of composer Ben Burtt vibe from him. It's like, here's an old part of a keyboard that I found in a dump. Let's see what kind of sound it makes.
Yeah. He just like hits something with a hammer. Let's see what this does.
Yeah. It's like, does this, oh yeah, that makes an interesting sound. And all of a sudden he has Beethoven's Fifth with a hammer and a piece of garbage.
Well, and I didn't know who he was before this. And I had such a different idea in my head of who he was, the music was so amazing. I didn't expect him to be as young as he was, and I don't mean to be derogatory towards young geniuses, but
he's probably younger than you, and you haven't done anything close to what he's done.
Jabba the Pod.
I mean, I'm speaking for me as well, because I'm looking. That's how I look at him. I'm like, look at this young guy, he's a genius. I'm
audio
like,
masterpiece.
What's my excuse? Well, no, he's an Oscar winner, and also wrote, Black Panther, The Mandalorian, and let's not forget the score for New Girl.
Did he really?
Yeah, man.
Yes, right. We've talked about this on the show before.
Oh, all right.
Gotta start welcome somewhere. To the show.
He blocks it off.
The show that you just were touting as being so magical. Everything else you seem to remember so well. But anyway, he talks about how musically it's one man's journey, and it's the way we get his emotions a lot are through the music, because we're not seeing his face. And as Caitlin already mentioned, he read the scripts and then closed himself off in his studio for a month with just instruments and no computers either. And he's like, there's something about the hands on the actual instruments that really, and that kind of made me think, well, that's the same approach they're making with practical effects and everything. And that kind of hands-on approach, even with the music.
Well, and he said it talks back to you, right? Is that what he said? That's how he framed it?
Yeah.
It's like the instrument.
It's like, well, one musical idea will then lead to another one, another one. And I'm like, I'm not judging at all, because I'm like, whatever it takes to make it, because he backs it up with, you can't argue with the content and the results that he gets. The joy on the face of Jon Favreau when playing the theme on the set.
Yes. And him showing it to the camera. He's like, look at that.
Yeah. And he's like, that's it. And he's like, he came up with 5 themes they played. One is like, that's the one. And you could tell it surpassed their wildest dreams, which is, again, the thing that surpassed George's dreams back in the day was the Williams score. Yeah. It's like everything let him down except for one thing. Which was, the score was better than he ever thought it would be.
He just shows up on set and he's like, oh yeah, I got the theme here on my iPhone. One second here.
One second. Here's, hold on. Let me pull out this.
It was
music.
In the woods.
Genius.
It was in the fourth episode. And it's playing it.
Bryce Dallas Howard is there. She's like, ooh.
Yeah. And she's like, I could do that. I just don't want to. It's real instrument, electronic toys. But then the third piece of the puzzle is the symphony orchestra. And he says this is how he didn't honor the classic Star Wars sound with classic Star Wars themes, but he honored it with the full symphonic sound, with 80 people putting their own personal touch on it, with even his own wife as concert mistress of this symphony, which is a fun detail. That's great. I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. So, and then
what
you cut in with the symphony playing the whole thing. It's like, that is how it's like, you have your recorder here and your little things, but then once you cut in with the symphony, that just makes it Star Wars. And Favreau then says, everyone disagrees on Star Wars, obviously, as we've proven in the last half hour, except when it comes to music. He's like, fans usually say the music is perfect, but they didn't just want to repeat it or use a shortcut to get to the audience, which they could have done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the most obvious shortcut of all time is play the Force theme once and I'm in.
Right.
That's why trailers rely so heavily
you
on it.
You son of a I'm in.
But they don't do that. And Goranson says, with 8 episodes, it was like 3 feature films together. And he wanted a through line. He said each episode is very specific. So the challenge was every episode kind of had to have its own sound and its own themes, but they also had to have a through line. And so he said the main Mando theme was the through line that tied everything together. Mm-hmm. And Dave Filoni said something great here. He says, you can't cherish it so much or hold it too tight, because that makes it something that it's not meant to be.
Great lesson
in life. Ready, he's like, if they weren't ready to take a chance with the music while still honoring what was already there, then it wouldn't have worked. So, and I'm just like, well, I'm glad they took that chance. And then it ends with Goranson showing massive love for John Williams and the impact, saying that's it, that music from Star Wars is what got him into classical music. And he, I love this quote from him. He says, I'll never be able to do what John Williams has done, but I want to try to bring something new and exciting and will make kids excited in the same way I was. Right. And Filoni says, the kids that grew up with this, that now grow up with Mandalorian, will have that same connection to this music that Goranson and the rest of us had to Williams' music.
Totally.
Which is just wonderful.
Yeah.
So that was, that's, I'll say it, that's my, my favorite episode of the Disney Gallery, just because I couldn't believe they were doing one just all about score.
Mm-hmm.
They never go into it that much on the movie documentaries.
I mean, we kind of figured that they might, though, right?
Yeah, like we did, because it's what else is there? It's, there's eight of, yeah, these. It's, you know, so it's, they're going to get, it's like,
you got to find something.
Yeah.
So then we get to episode eight. It's all about craft services.
I was just going to say that.
You know, not quick enough. Damn it.
Damn it.
Not quick enough. They have all kinds of roasted Mr. shack.
Yeah.
And Yip Tip and Zizor salad.
Damn. I was going to say that too. You beat me to it.
Yeah, too slow, Romano. Anyway, the new episode eight, came out this morning, June 19th, 2020. Connections, Star Wars props and characters that made their way onto the show. And this is pretty, this whole thing was a giant supersized rundown of every Easter egg and reference of character and, yeah, prop that made its way from Star Wars lore into the show. And we were talking about this right before we started. We've pretty much already gone through every single thing,
yeah,
here. Not to toot our own horn, but toot. Not to, you know, blow our own recorder, but...
As Brian, like, just kind of is like, yeah, we did that.
Yeah. It's like, if you go back and listen to our first season,
Keila's,
our Amanda
throwing her
episodes,
hair back,
it's like,
you know.
We have called out all of these before, but don't go back and listen to those, because we were still figuring out all our audio issues, and still are, really. Anyway, so Favreau says they were drawing from all over the Star Wars canon. He says the incinerator trooper from one episode was from The Force Unleashed. The E-Web cannon was from Empire. Death troopers from Rogue One. A lot of aliens and suits built for other movies they're using. They have, you know, this, I mean, they're not having to create everything from scratch, because,
yeah,
Lucasfilm,
yeah,
has all this stuff. And when he says that they cut to a Rodian who was in the bar, and I've always thought that Rodian was the same Rodian that we see in Solo, in Enfys Nest Squad.
Mm-hmm.
It's the,
yeah,
same coloring. I'm convinced it's the same Rodian.
They didn't give you that detail.
You'll never convince me otherwise.
I was waiting. I remember you saying that. I was waiting for them to say something, but then they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't. But, you know,
your heart,
yeah.
In my heart, it's the same costume. I don't know if it's the same character. Prop rabbit holes. They immediately start talking about the Camtono, aka the famous ice cream maker, which I don't think we talked about this on the show.
No,
it was,
we
written
definitely
about,
no,
it on the site.
Yeah. John Favreau was so excited about those. I think,
yeah,
that's what made it my favorite episode, is just like his enthusiasm about everything is so good. He's such a nerd.
Yeah, he was. This is what he was most excited about getting into the show, and this was something that listeners will know it from the famous scene in Empire Strikes Back where everyone's evacuating and there's a guy towards the end in an orange jumpsuit carrying it. It doesn't actually look like an ice cream maker. It is an ice cream maker. It's props just ran out of stuff and gave him an ice cream maker. And Action Figure came along and gave him the name Will Rowe Hood. And this guy has been celebrated as, you know, the guy with the ice cream machine. He has to save one thing from his city. He loves ice cream that much. He chooses that. He wants to make sure he can always make it. The jokes are endless, but now it's celebrations. And they talk about this in the episode. There is, at every celebration, there's the running of the Will Rowe Hoods.
Oh, my, yeah, God.
There's about 20, 25, 30 Will Rowe. And you could find these on YouTube. Guys all dressed in orange, carrying their own ice cream machines, which are very hard to find, that kind of ice cream machine, because Will Rowe Hood cosplayers are buying them all.
Yeah.
And they do the running. But now we know that it's now called a Camtono, and it's used, he said, well, no, I'm going to use it as a special kind of safe. And that's what the client carries holds the Beskar in.
Yeah.
So it's a special. They say it's kind of like the briefcase from Pulp Fiction. They turn this ice cream machine into that, and you can carry, you know, keep all kinds of valuables in there. Matt, you have a Camtono that you keep your Legos in.
Yes, many Camtonos.
Brian wrote a great piece about this for sci-fi.com that y'all can check out if you want to read a little bit more about it.
The deeper history of the ice cream machine and the Camtono and a whole lot more jokes.
Can I just say, like, now it makes you think, like, what was Will Rowe running with, you know? Will Rowe running with.
Well, it's like what was in his Camtono.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it was just full of ice cream.
I really hope. What kind of ice cream do we think it was?
Klondike bars.
In the article, I said Rocky Road just because that was.
You did say Rocky Road in the article,
Funniest, but probably it's like. It'd be funny if it was a Camtono and it's like, what kind of ice cream? It's like vanilla. It's
like, okay, but what's the best ice cream flavor?
Ooh.
What is this, the ice cream?
It has nothing to do with anything, but
cookies
I just
want
to know.
Or what's cookies my favorite?
Cream. Cookies and cream. Brian, what's yours?
No way is that the best.
What's yours?
Some kind of chocolate.
Okay.
It's another thing. That's another food that I don't eat in front of people.
Mine is mint chocolate chip.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That one I would eat in front of people.
Our producer Harry says that chocolate is the best.
Psst. Chocolate.
Right. We can edit that out. I'm just kidding.
Let Harry have his moment.
Oh my God, I can't believe we were talking about this. Anyway,
it's the finale.
I'm sorry, it's my fault.
Favreau was saying, all of this is staying in. While episode 9 was going on, and here, Matt, feel free to add in more of your hatred. They're over here, episode 9 going with legacy characters. They were over here taking characters that are barely ever given this, you know, highlighted at all and giving them a spotlight, like Devoronians and certain droids. And then Filoni says, yeah, the peg warmers, which I love that he said that. And he says it a couple times here. And that's, you know, the Rite Aid has in their toy section still has a, you know, by me anyway, the last time I was in there, they still have an episode 1 Padme and funeral outfit.
Oh my God, really?
On the peg. It's the only Star Wars figure in that section.
Weird.
And it's been on that peg
great.
For 7 years.
You know that's a huge in-joke at that Rite Aid, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Among
it's
all
like
the
nobody's
employees.
Nobody's going to buy it.
Oh,
it's
go
like
buy
Walmart.
It.
It's like, I think that recently.
Maybe one day
I'll
go up to Astoria and buy it one day.
I mean, I'm always tempted to just, I'm like, when am I just going to buy it?
Buy
when,
it.
One of these days, when am
I'm
I just going to
do
haven't.
It? I'm shocked you
haven't. And they haven't taken the price down. It's still like $10. I'm like, you'd think it would be awesome. But you could find things like, I know episode 1, 3PO is a peg warmer, but probably the biggest one recently is Constable Zuvio. Because
I don't know, me and my brother had an episode 1 3PO with all the wires and everything.
Yeah, I have one because Wires wanted to, you know, what wanted a figure of himself, and that's
right,
as close
absolutely.
As you get. Anyway, so I love that Dave, of course, he knows what peg warmers are. And
well,
of course he
well real quickly,
it,
I don't know. I'm stealing your thunder, Brian, for later, but like one of the best lines in the whole thing is like, they got to play with all, like, go back to the big brother thing. It's like, you didn't get all your big brother's toys. Like, you got his hand me downs. You had like he only gave you like the,
here's
the toys to play with.
Here's a Jawa.
yeah.
It's like, here's this, the ones that you didn't get Han or Luke, but you got like, so, but
you got a Mando, you painted him silver,
like,
you know?
Yeah. And look what they did with it. He says, you know, this is where they had IG-11 came in, you know, because IG-88 blew minds, even though he was just stuck in the background. He was
his head was moving just a little bit.
Yet with random crap they had bolted to the floor, he didn't have feet. He was like he didn't have feet designed for it. You
his
know,
head
he
was from
move.
The cantina.
exactly.
Yeah, like.
And everyone just ran with it. And that's all it really takes is for a Star Wars legend to be born. And then, I mean, Dave and company would then use that design a lot in Clone Wars. And then, you know, look what happened. And now we have IG-11. And then they have a little bit of Taika on the ADR stage doing IG-11's voice, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
And Filoni has this great line because they're running down all these things. It's like we have like an IG-88 thing and like the ice cream maker. And John's like, with these elements, we can launch Disney Plus.
That was also one of the best lines of the thing.
Yeah,
that was I cackled. It was so good.
Because, I mean, they take the work seriously, but they don't take themselves seriously. Right. And that is key.
Yeah.
I guess, Matt, this is a time for you to say, unlike J.J. Abrams.
I mean, you said it.
Who also doesn't take himself seriously. Anyway. Then they talk Quarrens. They talk Blurg. They get a deep cut of the Blurgs coming from the first Ewoks movie, which we've talked about before. And then, yeah, they talked about the Ugnaughts and the Jawas. They said Kahweel originally didn't speak English. It was Dee Bradley Baker doing a temp voice, snorting back and forth with Jawas. And Favreau's saying it's like they wanted to try it. And Filoni's like, okay, this is my first live action thing, so maybe there's something I don't know.
Maybe this is how you make magic happen. This is how movies happen.
Yeah. But he's just seeing like a guy with a bucket on his head, someone in a pig face mask, and Jawas snorting at each other, all of it subtitled and nothing human to latch onto. And he's like, is this live action? Is this how it works? And Favreau's like, okay, nope, that obviously doesn't work. We're going to do it another way. Yeah. And he's like, okay, I was being nice. It's like, and Favreau's like, thank you for letting me try that. It doesn't work. So when we talk about time to fail, it's like, yeah, it's also when you think Kahweel kind of becomes the Yoda of the first season in a lot of ways. And then they said, well, who's going to get to do the voice? I don't know. Nick Nolte? Sounds good. wow, they arrived at Nick Nolte, but damn, it works. Filoni then says the first live action actor one-on-one interaction he ended up directing, no mask or anything, face to face, ended up being Werner Herzog.
Amazing.
Which, God, can you imagine?
Yeah. Filoni said, he was saying to himself, what world is this? How did I end up here?
I've seen your cartoons. Like, I really like them.
I really like the Last Airbender. Yeah. I didn't like the live action one, but I like your cartoon.
I have a question about season four, episode three.
I like the big thing and the big beast in the ice. I like the firebending nation.
Here's the thing. He wasn't a coward.
No.
Filoni isn't a coward.
No way.
Dave Filoni, you are not the coward.
He's a wolf.
I'll tell you who is.
There we go.
Matt Romano was a coward. Anyway, not really. So Favreau says, yeah. And he says, yeah, it's fan service, but in the way of, you know, would this be cool fan service? It's like not fan service for the sake of doing it. It's fan service because they're fans.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, Matt, it's they're playing with their toys, which is this what this whole behind the scenes series has unearthed.
Yeah.
That's what this whole thing is, them playing with their toys. And it makes me so jealous, but at the same time, just grateful.
And as Kathleen Kennedy also said, rich parents.
There we go.
It's like, that's the thing. It's like they're just the AV club working on a YouTube show, and she adds in, and you have rich parents.
which is very true, genius.
Yeah.
So they keep talking about connections, again, that we've already discussed, like Dr. Ball. I because of Robot Chicken, I'll never be able to not think of
not call
as
Dr. it
Dr.
Ball.
Ball.
Yeah.
The troop transport that's based on the Kenner toy that they turned into a tank for Rebels that they then put in live action. I still can't believe they did that.
Amazing.
And how it's going to play with fans. And you know, that's what they're constantly thinking, how they're going to play with fans, is how is it going to play with fans is what they're constantly thinking. You know, is this going to be too much or is this without, you know, because being fans, they're, you know, able to kind of suss out what they would like, and that might be a good indicator of what fans would like. But Filoni says it has to work on a story character level first. And then he's like, if that's the key, that's always their key, is to make it work there. The fan, the super fan, will get the little bit of added gold in there. It's using the universe, but not doing it for the sake of doing it. They talk about the AT-ST, which I didn't realize it's was not supposed to be in Empire Strikes Back, but Joe Johnston just threw that two-legged at the time, just called the Chicken Walker.
Yeah.
In one shot,
it's kind of a joke,
Just for a joke, and George liked it, and so they upgraded it to the AT-ST and used it full on in Return of the Jedi. And they're talking about how with that and the Blurgs, it's like they can digitally make it move smoother, but it's the Yoda ear situation again. It can't, if it moves too smooth, it doesn't feel like the same thing we've always known. So they're kind of keeping that stop motion feel, even though obviously with digitally they can take that out, but they don't want to do that, and we don't want that either.
Perfection isn't fun. It's the imperfections that make something seem real.
Yeah, exactly. That's the lived in universe.
That is
isn't
deep.
It?
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
Also, if Caitlin says it, it's okay. Is that what you said? Okay. Anyway, they talk about the Amban pulse rifle coming from the holiday special, and this is another favorite moment where you could see Jon Favreau talking to George Lucas set, and his smile is so wide. And he's saying,
he's
it's
so
like,
excited
you see the,
to have
you see
George
the rifle
Lucas
over
there?
And George's like, yeah. No, he's like, but you see that rifle? He's like, yeah, I'm seeing the, you know. He's like, do you know what that's from? He's like, that's canon, right? It's like, you know, you wrote it from the, he's talking about the rifle from the holiday special. He's like, and George just could not give less of a crap. And he's like, well, you wrote it. And George just says, not really.
I imagine the excitement that Favreau had having him on that set, and just like George Lucas just doesn't care.
Well, talk about a man who's
like,
been
can
asked
you believe
every
that
question.
I took this deep cut from the holiday special? It's like, and George's like, yeah, I didn't write it. I don't have anything to do with it. Like, show me a you know, pocket-sized aquarium and we'll talk. And then they get into the Darksaber a little bit and the history of that and how practically they have to make that happen. I'm sure we'll see a lot more of. And Filoni says, you know, in Clone Wars, it's stylized, but here in live action, it wouldn't be. So what does the live action version of the Darksaber look like? What is it going to look like in action? Talk about something I can't wait to see. Then they go back into the cantina, which they completely rebuilt in every detail. And here's some interesting canon. They pretty much confirmed that the droid bartender in this, that we thought was the same model torture droid from Jabba's Palace, they pretty much say it is the same droid from Jabba's Palace, EV9D9, turned bartender, and voiced by none other than Mark Hamill.
It's amazing.
Really fun.
So the fact that that was the same droid, canon, fire!
You are a protocol droid, are you not?
That's what he says.
And? Yeah.
And I think you'll fill in nicely. Yeah. And that's not all.
We talked about this originally, but we weren't sure until this.
We did, yeah. It's R5-D4. It was just going to be the same make as R5, but another astromech. But Filoni went up and said, had them paint it like R5, and then said... He then decided he wanted it to be R5 because he's like, I don't think he ever got off Tatooine.
Right.
So he then went so far as to have them paint the spot where the restraining bolt blew off. And also, this was the place where the motivator blew.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, darken it and make it a little, you know.
Make it like oil drip down.
Yeah. It's like, so they made it. So that officially is R5-D4. Back in the cantina, still on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Once again, canon, fire! The canon is so happy to be in use again.
It has a purpose.
So and we're getting into Taika talking then on his first day of set. It feels truly real where he turns a corner and there's a whole squad of stormtroopers. And I can imagine that that's when it would hit you that this is actually happening. They talked about kind of to fill out the numbers. They brought in a lot of members of the 501st Brigade because they just didn't have enough. And Filoni was already a member through Clone Wars, and now Favreau is too. And we talked about this during this episode too, but it's worth noting the 501st is the world's largest costuming group. They are the people that have all assembled their own stormtrooper armor, and they do events, premieres, but mostly they do charity, hospitals and everything else. They do so much charity for, you know, kids just, you know, a surprise of having, you know, a bunch of stormtroopers show up for that little Star Wars feel or whatever. That's mostly what they do. And it's really positive stuff all around. So a big group of the 501st shows up to this shoot. They don't know what it is. They don't know. They think this is going to be another, you know, event or something like that. They have no idea they're about to be in Star Wars,
right,
in their own armor, and their own armor is about to get actual blasted dust and battle scars from the scene they're about to do. And they also said the great thing there with using these guys and gals is they all know how to move. They know how to stand. They have the perfect energy. They don't have to be taught any of this. They know how to be stormtroopers already. So that must have been the ultimate fan experience.
Right.
Which, talk about the ultimate fan experience, we then gets into the cameos of the X-Wing pilots. And as we know, this is Deborah Chow, Rick Famuyiwa, Dave Filoni, and Matt Romano. You were the fourth one.
Yes,
they did cut you.
I was in an A-Wing. Yeah, I was in an A-Wing. But
it's unfortunate.
You're not going to go with Y-Wing?
No.
He's made his choice.
Y-Wing crying in the corner over here. Okay. Never heard you go off about love for an A-Wing before, but whatever.
Yeah. it's right in front of me. It's literally just right in front of me.
He has his Lego A-Wing, so.
Yeah.
Okay. The direction from Favreau for Dave was, look, disinterested and bored, which was perfect. When you rewatch the scene, is exactly what it was. And they said just like making it look like it would look like it did in the 70s, and it totally does. So Dave then recounts the story. He's shooting second unit for chapter 2 all day, so he's in the mud and the muck with the Jawas and the egg and the mud horn, and he's just exhausted, knowing that this X-Wing pilot shoot is at the end of the day, and he's texting the other two. They're really going to do it. Rick decided that they were going to do it. Deborah Chow was not happy about it. Filoni is trying to get out of it. He's coming up with excuses, and Favreau made it clear. He's like, look, it's happening whether you want it or not. He's like, I will never let this go
if you don't do it.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the thing. He's like, I don't want one more thing from Favreau to give me crap about, because apparently he gets crap for having won the Daytime Emmy.
Yeah.
For the Clone Wars, whereas Favreau was nominated for one but did not win.
Oh.
I don't know what he was nominated for. Was he nominated for his appearance on the Clone Wars?
I have no idea.
Or did Favreau host a daytime show that I'm just forgetting about?
I have absolutely no idea.
I have no idea. We have to look it up, though.
5 a.m. with Favreau. I'd watch it. So they shot with an entire X-Wing on the stage, not just the cockpit, and it ended up being the one that was about to be shipped to Orlando to Galaxy's Edge. So it's not the same ship, because the New Republic fighters are the classic ones from the original trilogy, and the one in Orlando is a sequel trilogy, new X-Wing. But the cockpit was the same, so they just used it. So that's cool. So if you're going to Orlando to Galaxy's Edge, that's the cockpit that all three of them sat in.
It's hilarious.
I wish I'd known that beforehand. I tried to go and to sit in the cockpit, but they frown on that there.
They might have pulled you out.
Like, sir, please stop climbing all over everything. And Dave revealed that his character's name is, and it's funny. He's like, "What was your?" He's like going like, "Yeah, is this?" And he's trying to figure something out. Like, "What was the name of your pilot?" It was, "Oh, Trapper Wolf." He knew it immediately. And I'm like, "Of course,
his name was Trapper Wolf."
How long is it now going to take for that Funko Pop to appear?
Oh my god,
I'm gonna buy it instantly. So
and the cosplay, Cannon, we gotta get the cosplay, the Trapper Wolf cosplay going.
I feel like that's your new cosplay, man.
Yeah, that's Trapper Wolf. Absolutely,
you're of the three of us, you can pull that off. Perfect, because you have a little Dave Filoni thing going on.
I do, yeah, that works. Yeah.
The look on your face is like, you just like,
I do have a Dave
so
Filoni.
Proud of yourself right now. Anyway, for Trapper Wolf, Cannon once again, fire. And it looks like there are a lot of outtakes of all three of the directors in the cockpit, and I would love just an hour of just seeing
having
those
a blast.
Outtakes.
Yep.
And the three of them just giving.
And Deborah Chow just not wanting to be there.
No,
she
was laughing, but it looks like it's like, oh, get me out of this. This is not what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. She's just like, I have so much to do. This is a waste of time now.
It's like, guys, we have a lot of work still to do. But
there's a lot of stuff.
And then that's where they dropped, the after-school program thing. And Filoni says, nothing will be better than the original idea. Thinking just suffocates the idea. Everything has to progress forward, which is something that this production did very well. And I think if that was pretty much the whole summation of the first season of The Mandalorian. It's taking the original thing, and it's adjacent but not copying it in pretty much every way. Final thoughts on anything, the Disney Gallery, Caitlin Bush.
That was really fun. I'm happy that we were able to talk about it. And more than anything, I just like whenever I'm watching this, we're sitting around and talking about it every week and dissecting it. And most of the time when we were watching The Mandalorian, the actual show, we caught these things. We talked about them. We went into them too much, definitely. But then I think about like my family watching this and all of my friends who maybe don't know a ton about Star Wars but still really enjoy it and love it. And so they are going to get so much out of this, and they're going to learn a lot. And that's very exciting to me.
Yeah, I can see my father being astounded by the technology of the volume.
Yeah.
Like
it's just, it's so
that
cool.
That's an actual thing.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it's been just because we also didn't know what the hell the show was going to be when they announced it. We're like, what? Okay. And it's kind of like the best put all together. It's such a great behind the scenes documentary that would be perfect on a Blu-ray. Please do that with commentary for each episode. Yeah. We will buy it. So, yeah. Anyway, final thoughts on the Disney Gallery. Matt Romano, a.k.a. Trapper Wolf, a.k.a. Will Rowhood.
A.k.a. J.J. Abrams. Anyway, Ludwig.
Nope, you don't get that one.
I don't get that one. I want to talk about Ludwig's big audio wall, his big, like, computer, not computer.
Oh, my God.
Come on. Like, what is that thing?
It
that
looks like it's about to come alive and eat you.
Yeah.
It
like,
looks
it's
like
terrifying.
Wallpaper that you'd buy on Animal Crossing.
It does.
I haven't put
God.
Up yet, but it's actually real. It's like a wall of computer, and it's all just
like a mad scientist music machine.
You don't just go into CompUSA and buy that. Yeah. Wow, I just showed my age. But probably put that together. It's like talk
just
about
like
it's like
poking things and
building
turning
a
dials.
Protocol droid to help mom. Yeah. It's like I'm building a computer wall to make Star Wars
to make music.
Yeah.
And he's like, check
it's
this
gonna be
like,
the fastest ever. Yeah, and he's just like it's like this giant what's that the theremin, but it's like anywhere you move your hand in that room, a sound happens.
Yeah,
and he's the only one that.
Oh my God!
Oh, you know he can. Oh, Ludwig Göransson, if this hasn't put you off and you're not listening,
please
no
come
way
on the show.
In a million years are you listening? Yep. But man, we'd love to have you. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it'd be great
for us. It'll be, you know, something
probably not for you, but really fun for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So does that make a difference? Probably not. Sure. Anyway, with that, we are going to go to break, but stick right there. We'll be back with so much more in just a few moments.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
We're back, and now it's time to take a look at some galactic points of interest.
Good news has come to the citizens of Lothal.
There are a lot of points of interest this week. First up, Star Wars Celebration, canceled.
Ah.
This isn't really a shock, but Celebration has been canceled for this year due to the ongoing global pandemic. So it is set to return to Anaheim in 2022. The dates right now are August 18th to the 21st. Matt, are we going to be there?
We are definitely going to be there.
Yep.
Executive decision. Yep.
It's recorded.
Should we just say it's like we're going to be, the three of us are going to be running the fan stage in 2022.
Yeah, maybe. Or we'll have a corner of the convention center that we'll corner off by the bathroom and you can come say hello.
And it'll be really dark and probably look really janky, but we'll be there.
Yeah.
Can we always have front row seats to everything in the main hall?
Oh, of course. We're on the stage, actually. I think you're emceeing it.
Oh, so they couldn't get Warwick said no, and James Arnold Taylor was busy, so it's going to be me?
Yes, right. And you're going to be debuting the trailer for the new Taika Waititi Star Wars movie.
So what, do they just skip like 1,000 other more qualified people, and they're like, just go with him?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'll take it.
He's fine.
Okay, well, put that down on your calendars, guys. Jabba the Pod at Star Wars Celebration, August 18th to the 21st. I got some plane tickets to buy. Other news, a big new Star Wars game was announced this a couple weeks ago. Was, I think, referred to as Matt's Mel Gibson Maverick flying game.
It was, that's all we've been calling it. We don't call it anything else.
Yes.
Yeah, it's something talked about. Wings of Mel Gibson. It was talked about. How you still, it's you heard Maverick, and you didn't go to Star Wars Flying.
I didn't hear it. The internet heard it.
In a Western remake.
Yeah.
He's just reflecting what the people want.
But your mind
want,
heard Maverick and didn't go flying. It went to that Mel Gibson, Jodie Foster.
Did. I was just saying
what the people are saying.
I brought you the voice of the people. Yeah.
It's called Star Wars Squadrons.
Yes. And it looks amazing. Yes.
Yeah, Mel Gibson's not involved.
Thank God.
Matt has three Blu-rays of that movie. It will release on October 2nd, and it is indeed a fighter pilot-based game set after Return of the Jedi, so you can fly for either the New Republic or the Imperial Remnant. There are two trailers out for it now. One of them is an overall story trailer, and the other one is a gameplay trailer. And it looks like the gameplay looks similar to the Battlefront 2 dogfighting, but better.
Yeah, right. It looks incredible.
And hopefully I won't suck at it as much as I do in the Battlefront 2, but... you know, probably will.
Probably.
It will have single player as well as multiplayer. I was so thankful that it's going to have single player. And here are some things that were spotted in the two trailers that have come out. You can definitely see Wedge Antilles. You can see Hera Syndulla wearing her outfit from the Freemaker Adventures, which is interesting. Mm. And they also make a reference to Vanguard Squadron. Tying Hera to Vanguard Squadron is a direct reference to the Star Wars book Alphabet Squadron. And the game may take us on board Hera's cruiser, the Lodestar, which appears in that book. It definitely sounds also like Vanessa Marshall is playing Hera. She talks once. I'm like, well, that's Vanessa Marshall, in which case... I would hope so.
Yeah, it's why
like,
wouldn't you?
Right. Well,
there's no reason to not. And she does games all the time. She's pretty much every time you hear Black Canary in a game, it's Vanessa Marshall.
Yeah.
And also on pretty much anything DC animated. Right, it is Black Canary, right?
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure I'm right. Anyway. also, a character that definitely looks like Rae Sloane, and since Twitter then has since... thought everyone just is thinking this is Rae Sloane. It can also be seen this would be her first appearance outside of a book, and if she's there, then this game would definitely take place during the year after Return of the Jedi, before the Battle of Jakku.
Okay.
If she's on the scene. John Jackson Miller, who wrote, I believe he created Rae Sloane. He was the first one to write Rae Sloane, I'll say that. I don't know if he created her, but for the first book in the new revamped canon, A New Dawn, which is a Rebels book, which is the first time of Kanan meets Hera. That's where we first met Rae Sloane. Anyway, he didn't confirm it, but they were like, how does it feel to see her, you know, up there? And he's like, oh, it feels great. So I'm like, okay, well, it's probably her. So to see Rae Sloane in a game, oh my God, that's going to be awesome. A Starhawk is also seen, which is something that has only been mentioned in books. This is the first time we're seeing what one looks like. And you'll be able to fly all kinds of different classes of ships, including, Matt, the U-Wing.
The U-Wing, back from the dead.
I gotta say,
Matt has like,
you know,
sparkles in his eyes right now.
Sparkles,
such a
glowing.
It's like you got with Matt. It's U-Wings on one end, J.J. Abrams is on the other.
Yeah, that's my.
But I gotta ask. It's like, how dare you?
How dare you?
Second off, you here's your choice.
Yep.
I'm gonna get you a ship now. U-Wing or Y-Wing? You can't have both.
Ooh.
Choose.
Well, I mean,
you
like
have 10 seconds to decide.
Okay. X-Wings are not on the table.
Nine.
It's just the
nope,
Y-Wing. Okay.
Just these two. 7. 6, 5, 4, anytime.
Y-Wing, Y-Wing.
2.
Y-Wing.
Okay. Wow.
Damn.
U-Wing love disappeared.
No, yeah. No, I take it back. U-Wing.
No, it's too late, too late, too late.
Because I can take my buddies anyway, on it, you know? I can take everybody for a ride. You guys
can fly on Caitlin's because Caitlin gets both. Anyway,
oh, great.
On the subject of pilots and fighters and Alphabet Squadron, actually, the sequel to the book Alphabet Squadron is coming out on June 23rd, so pretty soon. It's titled Shadowfall, an Alphabet Squadron novel. It is written once again by Alexander Freed. The first book was great. If you really love stories about pilots and everything else, then that is definitely the book for you. I've read a little of the sequel, and it picks the story right up in a very interesting fashion. If you're interested in this book, and you haven't read the first one, I would definitely read the first one first, because you're not going to know who any of these people are.
Right.
They're all new characters led by an Imperial defector. They're all really interesting.
There's a clear order in which you should read these books.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you're not going to have a clue what's going on. So definitely read the first one. Wait, and then read this one.
One more note on the squadrons, though.
We're past that.
I know,
though.
But I got to go back. I got it because
he's
got
to go back. He wants to rewind.
Can only go forward.
You know?
We can only go forward.
Yeah, we're going to reverse. Hold on. Wait. No B-wing. You know, B-wings are missing from squadron. I understand for the game you need a heavy cargo transport.
You don't know that yet.
I don't know. You don't know
that there's B-wings. Is it in the force?
Well, it's not in the trailer. That means it's not going to be in the movie. that how that works?
Okay, I got my thought in. That's it. Yep. Move on.
I mean, was that worth it? Was that really worth diverting this whole...
Okay. There's some Padawan out there who's like, yeah, justice for B-Wings. Where's the B-Wings?
They're going to be in there.
I don't know.
You're going to have them. You're going to get your B-Wings. Let's back up the train. Let's go back. Ooh, backwards woo. Backwards woo.
Let's return.
Returning.
Anyway, yes, the Alphabet Squadron book is going to be great. There are some familiar faces in there, including Hera Syndulla and Vanguard Squadron and all of that. So if you love pilots and stories about pilots, then that is the book for you. Speaking of books, a sequel was announced to the short story collection From a Certain Point of View. Have you guys read that book?
Nope.
I have not.
It's a really cool book with little short stories from like a little, say, Captain Antilles.
Oh.
At the very beginning of A New Hope. It's like his perspective on the attack. Then this random guy who you'd see, you know, in the cantina, but what's he thinking when, you know, Han shoots Greedo and stuff
that.
Like that. It's like little short stories with that, tons of authors and everything else throughout all of that runs the gamut of A New Hope. Some characters are very small. Some of them are, you know, a little more main and you actually hear them talk in the movie. So this one is, of course, going to be based all around Empire Strikes Back. Various perspectives from all kinds of characters, including the Wampa is going to get what is being called a tragic tale of loss and survival.
Sad.
The Cloud City Ugnaughts are going to get a story. We'll explore more about the cave on Dagobah. Another story will explore the unlikely pairing of IG-88 and Dengar, and I know one friend of mine is going to be really happy about that because it's Dengar. There's a huge roster of great writers working on this, and for full details, check out StarWars.com. There's so many writers working on this thing, it's not even funny.
It's insane. And
some of them, it's their Star Wars debut, so it's really cool for a lot of people. And my pitch was rejected, but I'm supporting the book anyway. I didn't write a pitch. That's okay. Finally, while I don't love talking rumors, as you know, this one is too interesting to not mention. But I want it to be clear, this is just a rumor. It is just a rumor. Nothing
has been
announced.
It hasn't been confirmed whatsoever.
Yeah, it's nothing has been announced, not even close. But it's just so cool that I have to bring it up. It's something, you know, people are talking about it. The rumor is that a spinoff / sequel is in the works to Star Wars, The Clone Wars.
Sir, yes, sir.
And that it's going to focus on the Bad Batch and Echo following the Siege of Mandalore. Now, nothing is certain. That's just a rumor. But people keep talking about it. I don't know how much of that is people talking about it like it's a thing to try and make it a thing. But I wouldn't be surprised because they had a hit with the Clone Wars. Disney had a hit.
Yeah,
it was a monster hit.
It's great.
So, of course, they'd want more.
Well, and we even talked in that episode, like the Bad Batch is like the perfect team archetype. Archetype, you know,
you got all the parts.
Yeah, you have all the parts. You got the Michelangelo, the Leonardo, the Raphael, the Donatello.
There we go.
You
know, I also love that we immediately went to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Of all the teams that we have, we went to TMNT. That's gorgeous.
We continue to all the time. Yeah. I mean, but it's also, so what would, and now with them and Echo, what would that series look like if it's after everything that went down? Would they be Jedi Hunters? Because would Order 66 have switched in them? Is that not a part of their programming because of them being Bad Batch? Was that taken out? Are they going to deal with that? Are there any other characters that, you know, could pop up? There's so many possibilities here. And again, but there are people that just claim that this is definitively the next animated series we're going to get because it looks more and more like the Sabine Ahsoka Search for Ezra thing is going to possibly be in Mando or live action somewhat.
Yeah.
So who knows? It's probably... It's probably not going to be the sequel to Resistance featuring Hype Faison that I know, Matt, you were looking for. This is it. This is just a really interesting rumor. Would you guys, I mean, I would totally watch this. Would you, Caitlin, are you up for another,
oh my God,
you know,
of course.
200 hours of television?
200. Ooh,
when you put it like that, here's the thing. I wouldn't have to watch it all at once, which is we'd go along for the ride. It would be a gorgeous ride. We would all take it together and it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, speaking of gorgeous rides, we're going to get to another ride that we're going to take in a little bit. But first, it's time for my personal favorite segment of all time, my favorite part of the show, a little segment called Captain's Corner.
I haven't had my muffin yet, Matt.
Hey, everybody! Woo!
Sake.
Oh my God, I'm a little lightheaded. Hold on.
Oh my God.
I wish all of you could have seen the way he moved his body.
Oh, I just knew it. So I knew it was going to be bad. And then you're prepping yourself for it to be really bad. And then it's so much worse.
What you got for us, Matt?
Oh, anyway, welcome to the Captain's Corner, everybody. It's another beautiful day here in the corner.
Come on.
We just want to talk about a little something we saw on the Twitters this week. Somebody unearthed the...
What is this accent? What is this character that has started emerging? It's like, I do the characters around here.
Get out of the corner, man. This is my corner. We're in my corner.
All right, have your damn corner.
So anyway, this little clip emerged on the nets this week. And it's from a 25-minute movie, which was a featurette on Return of the Jedi.
Caitlin, now there are two of them.
Oh, God.
And, well, tell us more about it, man. That sounds interesting.
Well, anyway, Brian, it's called Return of the Ewok. And it's written and directed by first assistant director David Tamblyn from Return of the Jedi. We think it was created for some kind of like convention back in the day, but it's a sweet little clip. Starring Warwick Davis as,
Warwick.
What did I say?
Just Warwick.
Warwick.
Sorry, we don't want to piss off Warwick Davis.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
We don't want to piss off Warwick Davis.
So anyway,
Totally well, actually, do you about that. I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine. It's just my segment. Anyway, yeah. So it's this clip from this featurette. It's adorable. Check it out. Mark Hamill also retweeted it. And say it was the first time he had ever seen it because, he had recorded it and just never saw the light of day. But it has some amazing moments. Has Harrison Ford asking Mark Hamill if he knows anything about Ewoks.
Mark, do you know anything about Ewoks?
No.
Great, great line. And then there's also, weirdly, Leia in her slave bikini just walking around
just
set.
Just there.
Just there.
God, poor Carrie.
Chewie's got a weird voice.
Man, always believe in this.
Could you tell me where Stage 8 is, please?
Oh? Stage 8? Over there. No, it's not.
Jabba the Hutt's palace.
Oh, my.
And this is all actually them?
This is all actually them.
Wow.
Like, and it's the bit, and Patton Oswalt was debating on Twitter if it was canon or not, but that's to be seen.
I love Patton Oswalt.
And then Darth Vader also has a really great moment in his weird, obviously James Earl Jones voice.
Come back, Ewok. Come back, Ewok.
Come back, Ewok. That's great.
Is it David Prowse trying to do the voice?
I don't know. Maybe.
It's always funny when he tries to do the voice.
Yeah.
After the first one where it was clear that he was no longer the voice, when he tries to do the voice,
Yes,
it's
so good.
But yeah, so it's great. It's delightful. Check it out. It's on Twitter.
Thank you for that, Matt. That was gorgeous.
Hey,
is that
thank you for coming to the Captain's Corner.
No, there's no closing. Okay.
We'll see you next week.
Okay, play the new ending bumper for Captain's Corner, please.
Matt Romano, your name reflects failure.
And now I'll turn it over to the Jedi Master to introduce our next segment.
This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and now it's time for Caitlin's Word of the Week.
Why, thank you. The word of the week is peg warmer.
Good job, Caitlin. She seems to be on top of things.
Yeah,
look at that one. That's a good one.
It's a good one. I feel good about that.
That's what we say every week. I love it. That's going to take us into real talk.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
Real talk, listener feedback. I want to give a special hello to listeners Dean Moore, who loved the episode about Score, as well as we did as well, absolutely. And another hello to Wish Kid Jones. Hello to you. Aside from that, I want to pull back the curtain even more than we usually do because it is the end of our season. So that means it is time for some end of season thank yous. So let's get real. First off, the time has come once again, when the audio assistant that works with us, that is assigned to our show and all of the shows at Sci-Fi, now has to rotate out to another area, to another part of the system, whatever, pretty much means they take her away from us, which is horrible, and I'm not ready. But
Brian doesn't do well with change.
No.
No, or trust or love. But anyway, she spent most of her time working with us in quarantine, unfortunately. I don't know if that made it easier or harder to stomach. Not sure. She had never seen Star Wars. She was just telling us this before we started recording. She had never seen Star Wars and was a little worried that if that was going to be a big deal. And because of the show has not watched all of it, but she's watched some of it as we've gone on and has enjoyed it. So she has at least an appreciation for it now, which is nice. She always, respects it, you know, of course. Isn't one of those people like, oh, that sucks. You know, she's generally not that kind of person. But she has been utterly fantastic. And so we all want to give a huge thank you to Victoria Herlocker. You will be greatly missed. And for what it's worth, you will always be family to us here on Jabba the Pod. Thank you. And may the spires keep you. It's also a great time at the end of the season to thank everyone at Sci-Fi Wire for allowing us to continue this silly show, even under quarantine. An even bigger thank you to our editor, Paul Schuler, who makes magic each and every week. It is not easy taking the garbage we send him and turning it into a show.
Yeah, y'all should hear this before it gets cut down.
No, no. No.
It's a disaster.
And and speaking of spinning gold from garbage, we have to mention our producer Harry Sultan, who keeps it all together, also keeps me on a leash. The show would not be possible without him. He oversees all of the audio here.
He is so patient. He puts up with so much crap.
So very patient.
He's one of the most patient people I've ever met. And I'm just so thankful to him for everything. And he's not going, that's the thing, neither of them are going anywhere. And though it goes without saying, I will say it anyway, a huge thank you to the two people who really make this show what it is, truly, Caitlin Bush and Matt Romano, two of the smartest and kindest people you'll ever work with or meet in real life. We have a lot of fun giving each other crap on this show, but that is not that's you know.
But we actually do all get along.
We all love each other.
It's we kind of all turn into, well, at least I certainly do once the mics turn on or whatever. But I'm telling you, it's two smarter, kinder, more wonderful people. You will not find them. So
I can't believe you wrote what we put in the script. I can't believe you did that. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, no, I have. There's a gun to my head. I have no choice.
Brian, thank you. Thank you.
I am capable of whatever. Anyway, finally, a huge thank you to you, the listeners, fans, Padawans, etc. Thank you for listening. Thank you for staying with us, and thank you especially for going on the Clone Wars journey with us this season. It really made it so much more fun and special for us. Once you know, rewatching the series, but then watching the new ones. It made it really, really cool. As I've said before, you know, that show had been in my life for a long time, and it really made it a thing. It wasn't just me watching it, you know, alone anymore. That sounds more sad than it actually is, but it was like watching it with an entire community and really seeing what everyone thought about it every week. It was really great. So because that was so special, we're going to do it again. Not with the Clone Wars, but with something else. Many listeners have requested this, and by many, I mean, I think 5 or 6. But it's a question we get asked often is, and we've certainly teased it, that we're probably going to do this, but now we're going to full on commit to it and confirm it. We're going to be taking a couple weeks off, but when we return for our season 3, it's going to be all in on, that's right, Star Wars Rebels.
Show me what you have on your Rebels.
Sometimes we're going to be talking about a few episodes at a time. Some episodes will get their own spotlight. We're working on a guide right now that will list what episodes we'll be talking about and when. So if you want to watch along with us or rewatch along with us, you'll be able to do that and track the journey. If you don't want to watch it or rewatch it at all and just unsubscribe to the podcast right now, you can do that too. That's the fun thing. You can do whatever you want. So Caitlin, are you ready to experience all of the Rebels greatness?
I'm ready. I keep being the person who has the most homework, but I was always good at homework, so let's do it, man.
Oh, you're gonna love it, Caitlin. Should be,
in terms of the animated shows, I mean, you've seen the movies millions of times, like a piece. So there's no that's no doubting of the cred here. And you famously go to sleep every night to Resistance clips.
Absolutely.
And Matt, are you ready? Are you ready to rewatch? Are you ready to go back to Titanic?
I've actually been rewatching all throughout these.
You already
past
have. Months. You told me you were rewatching it the other day. I'm like, whoa, okay. I guess we're doing that.
I got ahead of it. I mean, I'm definitely gonna go back and rewatch some of the more bigger episodes. But I love Rebels. I think Rebels was so much. I went right in the Rebels after Clone Wars because I had to keep going.
Nice.
And it's so much more fulfilling after the events of Clone Wars. Like, now that we know how Clone Wars ended, like a lot more stuff carries a lot more weight in Rebels.
Absolutely.
And it's great.
And it's a powerful what a powerful ending.
Powerful
ending to Rebels. Powerful ending.
Powerful.
But it's going to be great. And by the time that season is done, we'll be ready to start our season 4 right in time for The Mandalorian to start all over again. So we're not going anywhere.
No,
we've
got a
plan. We're not going anywhere.
And Star Wars continues.
We'll never die. 17,000 more seasons and a movie.
No one has ever really gone.
No. And I think that will do it, except for one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I brought the Starbinger in to pick us up.
Oh, hello, everyone.
What?
I am Y1RZZ, Human Podcast Relations, but you may call me Wires. It is delightful to meet you both.
Didn't he turn evil?
And why doesn't he remember us? Did you wipe his memory?
Technically, you wiped his memory, Caitlin, right before I altered yours. But worry not. I tracked him down. It's okay. Everything's fine. We're all fine here. Don't worry about it. We tracked him down, and I trapped our own Phantom Menace within a holocron that Ray Snoodles has pledged to keep safe, so don't fret. Wire's here. He's definitely back, and he is ready to podcast.
Oh, I am indeed. If I may ask, what is a podcast? Oh, and also, when does Disney Plus arrive?
Oh, no.
And with that, we're going to send this entire season off into the twin suns. But join
us
in a couple weeks.
The birthing droid is coming? The birthing droid? He's still here? We're keeping him?
He has a name.
Oomba. Oomba's staying here? Oomba is here? Yeah.
Oomba is here. Well, that's his new name now. As I said, we'll be getting the journey in a couple weeks with Star Wars Rebels.
Show me what you have on your Rebels.
As well as having more fun with everything and anything in the galaxy far, far away, if you can call it fun, I don't know. In the meantime, feel free to reach out to us on social media. If you so choose, Caitlin Bush, you can be found where?
I can be found at Caitlin M. Bush. That is CAITLINM. Bush like the beer, not like the presidents.
And Matt, after I lost my leg, you can be found on social media where?
I can be found at LarsIsLeg.com. Matt Romano, MattRomano on Twitter.
And I can be found on Twitter at Brian Silliman. That's at Brian, S as in Sky Guy, Illiman. So chat with your feelings and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. Subscribe, leave a comment, and give 5 stars. Run out. Give 5 stars if you're feeling generous. Snoke them if you got them. Take it, Chivy. And remember, hope is like the sun. If you only believe in it when you can see it, you'll never make it through the night. This is the way we have spoken. The Force will be with you always. Bop. Be the spark.
Let's go to Baskervalia.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.